Viewer discretion is advised for explicit content.
Dancer arrests, boxes on corruption. Now mixed in with all these papers are the vice squads.
I was sexually involved with a vice officer.
We were interrogated naked.
A total fear situation to work there.
How many members of the vice squad?
There were 7 officers that were involved with dancers, and I was just one woman at one club.
So my evidence has video, photos, audio, and documents. So I can back up everything that I'm saying.
The falsification of evidence, the false arrests, the threatening, the abuse of power, the retaliation. You know, people are afraid to speak up. We're really a microcosm of what happens in society.
We were living in a state of threat and fear all the time.
Kata Pierce Morgan's archives take us down a dark path for Stripper Energy, Chapter 3, Climate of Fear, or What Happens When You Poke the Bear. I need to take a quick break, and then I'll be back with more of Stripper Energy, Fighting Back from the Fringes. And just a reminder, this is also available as a video podcast. Go to kpbs.org/stripperenergy for more information. The history of Les Girls Theater, which Kata now owns, is a tangled web that plays out like a film noir. The adult entertainment industry operates on the fringes of society and under the weight of a whole set of negative stereotypes. But Kata and her late husband Jim Morgan fought back against efforts by police, polite society, and city power brokers to deny their freedom and make them feel less than human. They celebrated nudity and advertised it for all the world to see in hot pink neon to poke the bear at every turn, which of course had consequences. Kata has become the archivist for both Jim and Les Girls Theater. As she lays out the history, you can start connecting the dots that take Jim from a young sailor to the flamboyant owner of a small adult entertainment empire. It was clear from the start that the Baptist from Texas wasn't afraid of a fight. As a small land developer in the late 1950s, Jim was told paying bribes were part of the cost of doing business in San Diego. He not only refused to pay the bribes, but ran for mayor in 1959 on an anti-corruption platform. He lost that race, but opened a new business, and soon had a run-in with the Port Authority over party boats. Then he opened a nightclub that got raided. His years of poking the bear came to a climax in 1969 when he took on the city's censorship laws by staging the all-nude Let It All Hang Out show at his Les Girls strip club. Jim won that battle when the court said the show could go on, but it ignited a larger war with the San Diego Police Vice Squad that would last for decades, with Kata and her fellow dancers as collateral damage.
I mean, it was very obvious to me, because Jim was a whistleblower, that we were the targets, we were the easy prey. And they never gave up. It continued, you know, all through the 70s.
The city fathers were really out to make San Diego a tourist attraction.
And Jim's Les Girls, boldly promoting its nudie cuties and live nude show, did not fit in with their plans. But the more they harassed him, the more he punched back, said his friend and employee, Sidney Kasouf.
And he punched back hard. I mean, he probably got more than a few police officers fired.
He took it upon himself to crusade against what he thought was injustice committed by the police.
John Barrage would become the lawyer for James Morgan and Les Girls.
Back in the 70s, nude entertainment was viewed as an illegitimate and often illegal type of activity.
But whether you were arrested for taking it all off depended on where you were and who you were with. If you hung out with the right people at the right places.
I had the whole gang of the good old boys of San Diego, and they would have their parties at the Kona Kai Club or the University Club. They would have the dancing girls and they would be nude.
Nobody was gonna bust us because all the police chief and the mayor and everybody was there. So we didn't have to worry about getting in trouble.
While Bobby Rogers danced totally nude for the private parties at the Kona Kai and University clubs, she exposed herself to arrest if she went nude at Jim's venues. That was a double standard the Texan wasn't going to accept. And in 1969, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled the First Amendment protected nude entertainment. The ruling gave Jim a new stick to poke the bear. It was called Lake Girls Theater.
The police were not happy with that outcome, and then became this onslaught harassment of which I was part of.
When I arrived in San Diego to dance, I learned that I first had to get a police-approved work permit. I soon found these work permits to be a horrendous tool of abuse over women by vice officers. Within 3 months, I was arrested while doing a ballet adagio to the theme song of Romeo and Juliet and taken to jail.
Yeah, and look, there I am, 81371. Kathy Pierce.
So the cops didn't get your name spelled right?
No, they didn't.
I quickly learned that I had few rights as the report was falsified. I was thrown into a tank of derelict women and held until the next morning.
Cotta also danced at several other clubs around San Diego and was never hassled by the police. But back at Jim's clubs,
it was nonstop onslaught of harassment by the vice cops. The article that came out, 138 arrests and no convictions. And the city attorney, I'm sure they went, oh, these, you know, doofuses, here they are arresting these women constantly. We're not gonna charge them with anything. And the charges were always dropped or dismissed right out of the starting gate.
I ended up being arrested twice just to show me how easy it was for a vice officer to have me spend time in the city jail. No charges were ever pressed.
The vice cops worried little about hiding their intentions. KPBS freelance journalist J.W. August has spent decades reporting on San Diego police.
The emphasis the city put on the dancers, there was such an emphasis, they had more vice cops than they had cops doing robbery, doing drugs. The only larger unit was homicides. Vice was number two in the police department. Can you imagine that in a city? Even then, even though we were maybe not the big city we are now, I mean, that says something about the mindset of the chamber and the chief. We got it. We can't let that on our streets. The tourists won't like it.
I need to take one last break, and then I'll be back with more of Stripper Energy fighting back from the fringes. Cotta's second arrest came less than a year later during a simultaneous raid of three of Jim's venues. The dancer says this time the harassment included the planting of evidence.
And I had just arrived at Showplace, and I was in the dressing room, took all my clothes off, and all of a sudden these cops burst in. I didn't realize that this was a joint raid of all three clubs. And I didn't realize that how they set us up was to find one joint, one marijuana cigarette at each place. What impacted me was I saw the vice officer come in and pick up the trash can, kind of sideways like that, set it down and leave. And then I saw him come back in, pick up the trash can and pick up the joint. Pick up the marijuana cigarette. They found a marijuana cigarette in our dressing room, and they found one at the bedroom in the kind of hidden in the curtain, and they found one at Lay Girls. Marsha, in her statement, goes into great detail every step of the way, and she says that I was nude. I was prevented from dressing for a very long time.
So I'm in there naked with these cops that are threatening and not very nice. But that was my experience, you know. Right early on after coming to San Diego, I'm like naked with a bunch of men, you know. And on stage is one thing, but with the cops, it was a whole different power differential.
It was a power differential the cops took to the extreme. It bordered on sexual assault.
They had a standard of practice of coming into our locker space, into our dressing rooms, into the women's bathrooms, and we were interrogated naked, you know, and I mean, I'm not talking about like 30 seconds. They would be in there for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, interrogating a new dancer. 5 years later, when I'd become a manager there, and I was also working here, they held this one dancer in the dressing room for, at that point in my writings, it was over 20 minutes,
And one of the statements that the dancers wrote at that time was, this was our dressing room. You know, this was our private space. And these men had no right coming in there, you know, as they did, and interrogating us for a very long time in the nude.
As I wrote in my statement, I felt so helpless. There wasn't anything I could do about it. You know, and in those days, we complied with them. We didn't fight them because they would take you to jail if you argued. And so I didn't become an activist as I am today until, 7 years later. I mean, that's how long it took me to grow up and fight back. But not good things happened in the dressing rooms.
And I remember that was one thing she had talked about, how degrading it was to be hassled by the cops, standing there naked in your, dressing room or the dressing room, and the cops right up here, and you're totally naked, and you're an 18, 19, 20-year-old girl. How do you think that? I mean, that's really aggressive behavior.
Cotta and the dancers weren't the only people in Jim's orbit who suffered from aggressive and vindictive police behavior. Sidney Kasouf was a longtime friend of Jim's. The two first met in 1974 when they both witnessed a beat cop harassing a young black woman on Broadway. Jim immediately collected contact information from people, including Sid, so they could testify about the officer's abusive actions.
I did do that. That's right. Because they just came in and grabbed her.
Then it goes to court, and Sid testifies in court against the San Diego PD.
A few days later, a fellow beat cop pulled Sid out of Jim's Little Broadway venue. Only recently, when presented with the evidence 50 years after the fact, did Sid conclude that his younger self had been targeted after his testimony.
And there was this police officer, he said, get on your knees and empty your pockets. And I went, for what? The next thing I know, I woke up in a hospital. And my eye was out to here, it was like this. He had, according to witnesses, smashed my head into the cement more than multiple times, which is like 6 or 7 or 8.
And I remember Sid being beat up, you know, his face and everything.
It never occurred to me that it was that he knew who I was. So this is good for me, because I had no idea what I had done to have that kind of hammer fall in my face, you know.
If you get on their S list, you'd have problems. And the women experience that. If they give them lip or they didn't put out, they might be retaliated against. They were very vulnerable.
I mean, it was a very frightening time. It was distressful. You know, it made you feel off balance totally, because you never knew when they were going to do that.
In some cases, the harassment followed dancers home. Cotta remembers what happened to Cynthia, one of the few black dancers, and how vice officers came to her house to arrest her.
Because they said they didn't like the way she danced on stage, and they put her in handcuffs and took her to jail in front of her children. You know, I mean, that was horrible.
Cotta says Cynthia's arrest revealed another vice squad tactic, arresting dancers months after performing allegedly illegal moves on stage. By doing this, the officers denied the women the opportunity to challenge the allegations or get witnesses. As Cotta went through her files, she was amused at how the officers would write up their arrest reports.
He was saying, and then she faced the audience and showed her pubic area. But then he adds, and she's fully dressed. I mean, the way they wrote up the reports was hysterical. And the officer describing, trying to make it sound lewd and nasty, and they're having a really hard time doing it.
Cotta found a letter Jim had written about the police reports.
Okay, the use of the words such as vagina, fleshy parts, climax, masturbation, etc., are fine and proper in medical records. But the way Officer Palmer used them in his accusations reads more like the work of a sick mind. Frankly, the reports read like pages torn from a pornography sex book. And if I'd been on a jury, I must admit that I probably would have found the girls guilty.
The Me Too movement could have certainly helped these women because they were they weren't treated as a, you know, a citizen and someone trying to make a living. And they were harassed, forced to do things they didn't want to do in order to keep doing what they did. But back then, there was no Me Too movement. And because of that, these women were victimized repeatedly.
These motherfuckers come in and to terrorize them and to threaten them. And eventually, and this happened to me too, the only way you could keep from false arrests, from the maze, you know, I felt like we were rats in a maze, constantly being shocked, you know, where it really affects you emotionally. And you, what you did is you numbed out. You know, we banded together as a family. You know, we laughed, made jokes. And underlying all of it was this constant fear with the vice going to come in. And what I started doing was having, as part of his empowerment, of listing who came in, what time they came in, what happened. And you could see a pattern of the cops that were amazing and they were good and they were there to protect and to serve. You know, I felt safe with them. And then there was the Rat Pack.
There was a pattern of behavior by this rat pack of bad cops.
Police officers coming in, checking ID, taking down the address of the girls, sometimes asking them out on dates, sometimes intimating that it was in their best interest to go out on dates with them.
The fact that the police controlled the permits that the dancers needed to work gave them a tool to intimidate and threaten the women. Vice had the power to revoke a permit or to simply arrest a dancer on a busy Saturday night in order to deprive her of income. As the arrests with no convictions climbed to the hundreds, Jim instituted a policy.
And if you got arrested, which was common, they gave you $25. I mean, because, you know, we were getting arrested so often that they would pay you because you'd miss out on your hours at work and everything like that. So you still got paid for the night.
When it came to dealing with the worst cops, the dancers were left with the most desperate of choices: suffer near constant harassment or have sex with a cop.
And the fact of the matter is, and I know this to be true, that a lot of the vice guys were sleeping with a lot of the ladies that danced for a living in both types of clubs. Because if you slept with a cop, you won't be hassled. It's a free ticket. It's a get out of jail card. You know, you don't have to worry about it. If you sleep with the lieutenant, no problems when they come in here. That's really troubling. And that's the way it was.
Here's something I wrote back during the time period, probably end of 70s, I wrote this. And it was before I became a political activist, which was 83, 84. So I'll see if I can get through this, because it's... I wrote it with some emotion at the time, and I certainly was reliving and remembering a lot of things. So, my name is Kathleen Pierce. In 1976, I was manager at Showplace. Previous to that, I had worked for several years as a dancer after graduating from college. While managing Showplace Theater, I had a sexual relationship with a vice squad officer. In retrospect, I see how damaging it was for me. If I had to do it again, I would have done the same thing again. To understand this, I have to explain my sexual and emotional history and the dynamics that takes place between a vulnerable dancer and a powerful vice officer. I found beauty in my life through dance. Although I was dancing nude, I was more involved with the costuming, the choreography, and the pure joy of movement, that I was still untouched by the eroticism of my work. I was a very skilled dancer on stage. I was very familiar with false reports. I knew that I had no rights. In my 3 years of managing, however, I was never arrested, although others were, because I had the protection of a vice officer. And at some point, I no longer had sex with the vice officer, although I can't remember when it ended. It had lasted about a year, I believe. I'm now mentally healthy and have accomplished a lot academically and professionally. I have no desire to relive those years that I have now shared, but I must defend the dancers' right to make their own choice with whom they have sex.
coercive sex, no matter how willing the victim is, because she fears... I can't read anymore, I'm sorry.
You were harassed yourself at one time as a dancer?
Yes, and I had to, I went into therapy. I had nightmares. I was sexually involved with a vice officer. I have been through the experience of being threatened, intimidated. For these vice officers to have the power of revoking a license if they did not comply with what they wanted outraged me.
I was doing a lot of things out of fear, but the reason that, you know, anybody can get you to comply is ultimately they're treating you with respect, you think. You know, even though you're giving them a blowjob in Presidio Park, you know, it's just, I was just like clueless. I wish I could do it over again. I'd bite it off, you know.
There were some cowboys on the police department, individuals that were out of the norm and didn't go by the rules, didn't think the rules applied to them. Now, that's not to say there were a lot of good cops, men and women, who I knew and dealt with. Some great people, honest people, put their lives on the line. But there was also this group of individuals who took advantage of their positions in authority. Over time, we see this repeated again and again. And with Kathleen's story that you're working on, we can see how they overstepped the bounds, appropriate bounds, in handling issues of these clubs.
Sid saw the abuse firsthand as an employee at Showplace, another one of Jim's clubs.
I hate to say this like this. At that time, and because I like cops, I'm not against the cops. I'm a big supporter of the police. But at that time, in these situations, they were trying to get laid. Okay, and these are guys that were married and everything else, and they shouldn't have been like that. You know, so if anybody was immoral. Okay, it was the police guys that were coming in and doing this stuff. And the only ones that came in are the ones that were into that. Okay, it's not like, you know, I never met a nice police officer during that period of time when I was working there.
And there was no recourse or accountability.
I have an article from 1974 when they were trying at that time to get a citizens review board. A police review board. What that was for, we were not the only marginalized group that this was happening to. You know, it was happening to in all our neighborhoods. You know, people that were afraid to even speak up. You know, there was no place for anyone to go.
Kate Yavinditti is an activist and lawyer involved with police accountability.
The first Citizens Review Board was established by statute in 1988. So prior to that, the only thing that people could do was complain to the police about the police. And that would go to Internal Affairs, and Internal Affairs would basically do nothing. And then maybe if something was terribly egregious, like police killing people, maybe they could file some kind of a civil lawsuit, but the reality is that the police in San Diego and pretty much most places were so powerful that ordinary people really didn't have the ability to go against what was going on with the police.
And then there's the stigma that comes with speaking out, which only intensifies when you're from a marginalized group.
Most people, when they think about someone making a complaint against the police, do think about it as being those people, other people, or they must have done something wrong. There's a tremendous amount of belief in our society that the police are the good guys, and if the police arrest somebody or stop you or do anything, then you must have done something wrong.
It was tough. Tough to report on, tough to listen to, and tough particularly on the women who had to live in that world.
what Katya was doing and the women that she worked with is doing of filing complaints with the police department was incredibly courageous in that era, and I think it would still be courageous today.
We were like Geiger counters here. You know, we knew when a cop was honorable and good and there to protect and serve and had integrity, and then there were cops that should never have been on the force.
The constant trauma eventually took its toll, and Katya fled the adult entertainment industry in the late 1970s. But the 1980s brought even more intense harassment, as Stripper Energy Chapter 4 investigates the pressure of Vice Grip, or the rise of the Rat Pack.